is Karen Lyle of Sailsport Talk. I just spent a wonderful Sunday aboard the Matthew Turner Tallship, a unique hybrid tallship that combines modern conservationist technology with old-world wooden construction, built in Sausalito, California. It was a gorgeous day, with clear skies, winds 15 to 25 knots as we sailed from Sausalito to the base of the Golden Gate Bridge, and then joined over 100 boats in parade along the San Francisco city front as part of the Pacific Interclub Yacht Association's opening day on the San Francisco Bay. Two highlights from the day. One was seeing all the other classic and modern boats and yachts from the PICYA member clubs in the parade. They enjoyed looking at the Matthew Turner Tallship, and we enjoyed looking at them. I was with members of the Sailing Portal Club and International Yachting Fellowship of Rotarians San Francisco Fleet on the Matthew Turner, and we continued the sail after the parade, with the wind being just right for the mainsail, staysail, and four squares atop. There were two captains aboard. Let's listen into the conversation I had with one of the captains. This is Karen Lyle of Sailsport Talk, and I'm here on the Matthew Turner. This is opening day on the bay, San Francisco Bay, with PICYA. And I am speaking to the Matthew Turner's relief captain, Emma Hathaway. Emma, how are you doing today?
Another beautiful day in paradise. I can't complain.
So tell us a little bit about what a relief captain is.
Well, when the full-time captain needs a break, I come and give them that break.
So what kind of skills do you have to be able to be a relief captain?
All the skills that you would have to be a full-time captain.
When did you start sailing?
I was originally an assistant cook when I was 15.
So you said that you've been a full-time captain.
Well, I was full-time captain of the Seaward originally, which is the other vessel owned by the Call of the Sea. That was my first command in 2010. I've been in command of the Schooner Bowden for Maine Maritime Academy. I have taken command of Clearwater in the Hudson River. I was in command of a vessel in Hawaii called the Makani Olu for about a year. I suppose there's a couple more.
What do you experience when you have a mix of both men and women serving on a ship like this?
Well, certainly it's true that the crew are increasingly diverse in their gender identity, both female and non-binary people. I think there is still a lack of female representation in the higher levels of leadership in most of these organizations, but we're working towards it.
As a captain, what are you concerned about when you're out there in a situation where there's an awful lot of boats sailing around, especially in a parade like this?
Well, safety is, of course, the highest priority, and I think probably the largest component to that is just your people management and keeping the people in the places where they're not going to get hurt, and having the crew with their, you know, awareness being kind of to that note.
All right, a little crisscross applesauce for you there. Rick Tittle with you. It is Tuesday at 9:40 a.m. This is when we check in with our friends over at SailsportTalk.com, namely Karen Lyle, who co-hosts this segment with me. How are you doing, Karen?
I'm doing great. I'm very excited, actually, that we just had another Congressional Cup. That was one of the very first races we covered when we opened the show 161
years
or
ago.
So. Times ago, yeah. Episodes, we go by week here.
Yes, and on that note, Captain Ian Williams is with us once again. He just won the said Congressional Cup against another one of our guests, Taylor Canfield, and we have been following that rivalry on many races, the past two Congressional Cups and the Bermuda Gold Cup as well. Ian, welcome back to the show. Congratulations. Is there... you know, when you win a race, there are always, you know, myriad reasons why you won the race. But is there one or two that you can kind of point to?
Thank you. Thanks for having me back on. Well, I think one of the big differences on the day was probably on the start line. Our starting really, really came together. And although we lost the first start and lost the first race as a result, we were able to win the next three. They were pretty close. There were plenty of lead changes, but certainly being ahead at the start is a help.
Ian, I want to ask you a couple of questions because I want to dial into more of the technical parts of this choice of taking a penalty on the third race. So can you describe for me, just in the very final part of that race, what the tack was that both you and Taylor were on, and why you made a decision to take a penalty and do a spin to take an advantage? What explain that a little bit more for us, please.
Yeah, well, we have in match race sailing, we have something called delayed penalties, where if you receive a penalty around the course, ours was actually, we actually picked ours up before the start of the race. About, if I recall correctly, it was about a minute before the start. We made an error. We gave Taylor a little tickle and got a justified penalty. But we don't have to take it. It's effectively a 270-degree turn at some point in the race. And if obviously in a particularly in a big heavy boat like a Catalina 37, if you do a 270-degree turn, you're going to slow the boat right down. So if you do the penalty right at the finish, so that you can cross the line immediately on completing your penalty, then of course it takes you the time to do the penalty, but the extra penalty of then getting the boat back up to speed, you don't have to carry that part of it. So it's often an efficient way to do it. So if you do it on the final run, you have to complete a tack and bear away to a downwind course before the finish. And so we chose to approach and do it around the one end of the line, because that's a very easy way to judge exactly where the finish line is.
The Congressional Cup started in the 60s. This apparently kind of pioneered the concept of on-the-water umpiring. Could you elaborate on that a little bit, please?
Yeah, that's right. So so historically in sailing, we've had things called protest meetings, where you're a little bit like going to court. You file a protest during the race, and then you fill in the form when you get back ashore, and you go in front of a jury, and you both put your case and bring in any witnesses you want. And it's all very tedious and actually not very good way of resolving, you know, any incidents you have. And so it was decided partly for spectator reasons, but also actually to improve the racing itself, to bring in umpiring, just like refereeing, on the water in real time. And as you say, the Congressional Cup pioneered that, and we've had that on the World Match Racing Tour certainly ever since I've been doing it.
Ian, I've been reading David Perry's Match Racing Playbook by North Sails. Is that something that has come about because of all of the maneuvers and plays and strategies that all of you and your predecessors have done, or is it something that people read when they're in the pro or amateur sport of match racing as part of their training?
Yeah, I mean, I think I know Dave quite well. He's an excellent, an excellent sailor, but also an excellent tutor. And so I think he decided he'd put together, a book with all the plays. When I was learning, there was nothing like that really available. And I learned my whole game. I really made it up as I went along and learned from watching other top teams. And trying to learn from them and also think about what the possibilities were. So I think certainly for the people coming into the sport now, there's much more resource out there. There's Dave's book, of course. There's also a lot of YouTube videos out there of all the different match racing events, and you can pick up a lot from that.
I remember one time, Captain, when Lance Armstrong was winning all the Tour de France's on the last stage, he was in the Champs-Élysées going through the Arc de Triomphe, and he was holding a glass of champagne. He knew he was going to win. For you, do you get that moment where you can pop a bottle of Champers, or are you always vigilant that you could blow it?
On this occasion, we had a pretty good lead in the final race of the final. It was the fourth race of the final, but we were obviously 2-1 up and leading the final run. And it was probably about, if you watch the, you can watch the YouTube back or the live coverage back, and it's probably about 20 or 30 seconds before we get to the finish line. I think you can actually, I have watched it back, and you see that the team visibly relaxes, and at that point we knew that we were going to make it. What one guy actually says, I don't think you hear it, but he says, "Guys, I'm suspicious. Can you all shut up, please?" We haven't started celebrating. I don't think that would be appropriate, but you can tell that we know we're there.
Ian, you and Taylor have really had quite a rivalry, which of course makes it quite fun on the water because you have someone a worthy opponent. Tell me how it felt to be getting that fifth crimson jacket.
Yeah, well, it was amazing to level Taylor. Obviously, you know, I was really disappointed not to make it last year and try and be the first to five. I actually before this interview, I had a quick look at the past results, and since 2011, I think there's only been one skipper other than Taylor or myself that's won a Congressional Cup. And we've actually alternated since 2016. He won in 2016, us in 17, him in 18, us in 19. 20 was a blank, 21 was him, and now 22 is us. So so certainly between us, we have dominated the event. It often comes down either to us in the final or in some of those wins, you know, we've beaten him in the semifinals or vice versa. It is a very long rival we've had. We have very different styles, and that makes it quite interesting. I think as time goes on, we learn more and more about each other and how to nullify each other's skills, really, and that makes it such a fun challenge.
You know, when I think about the Catalina 37s, can you tell us a little bit more about how ornery and how easy those are to sail?
They're obviously an old design. They're a very heavy boat, and so getting them up to speed is really important. Out of manoeuvres, it takes a long time to get back up to full speed. They're quite a challenge to match race with six. The sails are pretty big, especially the spinnaker is hard to get down. Taylor and his team, they actually sail with seven people on board, and I think there are times when maybe they have a small edge having the extra hands, and then sometimes we have a small edge by having bigger people. It's a weight limit, so you can have seven or six as long as you're under the total weight limit. So we'll end up with six and with some slightly bigger, stronger people on board as a result.
Do you want to give a shout out for your teammates?
Yeah, well, absolutely. I had a fantastic team this year. It was some of my regular guys weren't available, but Richard Sydenham on tactics, he's done a lot of match racing with me for the last 5 or 6 years. And then the other guys, I had Matt Cornwell on the bow, Steve Mitchell in the pit, John Gunderson trimming, Andy Escott on the main. As I said, Richard Sydenham. Really, it was a team that came together quite late. I have sailed with them all before, but some of them not for a long time. And actually, some of them hadn't ever met each other before. So we introduced to each other on the practice day, and off we went and tried to get to know each other and get to work out how to get the best out of it.
So at this point, do you, sit back, have a cigar and a cup of coffee, or are you on to the next thing?
Yeah, I have a regatta this weekend in the UK in a class of boat called a Cape 31, sailing a boat called Fanatic with John Cooper. So I'm looking forward to that, and then really just waiting to fix our schedule with the World Match Racing Tour. Things have been difficult with COVID, and there's still a little bit of uncertainty about exactly what events we can do this year. But certainly hoping to get back onto some more World Match Racing Tour regattas.
As things have started back up after the COVID, have you found there to be any differences in the way the races are being conducted or your experience of them just during this pandemic?
Well, I mean, I think that the big thing for our sport is that it's commercially funded, and the events have struggled to keep that going through COVID, as is understandable. I mean, that one of the big strengths of the Congressional Cup, of course, they have sponsors, but they also have a huge volunteer base at the Long Beach Yacht Club, and a lot of private club member sponsors for the event as well. And that's actually given that event a lot of stability and is providing a lot of stability to the sport overall. So, you know, it's a big thank you to the Yacht Club, to the Long Beach Yacht Club, and all the volunteers. I think you're having Lisa Meyer on next week, aren't you? She was the chairwoman this year for the Congressional Cup, and she runs a huge team of volunteers. And as I say, thanks, massive thanks to them. And for me as well, thanks to Gladstone's Long Beach for supporting our team this year and getting us all the way to Long Beach to compete.
There he is, Ian Williams, owner of now 5 Crimson Blazers, tying the all-time record with the Congressional Cup and still at it, another regatta back in the UK. Ian, best of luck. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks. Thanks so much for having me.
All right. And Karen, good to hear you as well.
Yes, it's great to talk to you and co-host with you as always, Rick.